meeting, the March 29th, 2016 Legislative Commission on Pensions and Retirement. All of our action items tonight are going to be heard and laid over for possible consideration for inclusion in 2016 Pensions Omnibus Bill. And as many of you know, this is a very busy week for the House and the Senate because we do have our first deadlines. And so you're going to have members coming and going throughout the evening. And to make sure that we are respectful for everybody who has come here from a distance and others in the legislature, we're going to go ahead and get started. Our first bill this evening is going to be House File 2810, Representative Howe, also Senate File 2743, a member of our commission as well, Senator Pappas, who is otherwise predisposed at this time as well. Representative Howe, I'm going to, before we ask you to tell us about your bill this evening and to introduce your testifiers, we're going to refer to Ruslan Chesky, who is the Executive Director of the Pensions Commission here in the state of Minnesota, and have a little bit of backgrounding, and then Representative Howe, you will be on deck, sir. Ruslan Chesky, you'll set the stage for us on House File 2810, Senate File 2743.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The bill basically does two things. It expands the definition of killed in the line of duty to include a death that occurs within 24 hours of an activity that's emergency or disaster relief, fire rescue. So it expands the definition to include those situations where it's not during the actual activity, but within 24 hours of it. And then Section 2 of the legislation has an impact on the Public Employees Police and Fire Retirement Plan by including in the definition of death that is determined to be a killed in the line of duty death or killed in the line of duty to a death that is determined to be such by the Commissioner of Public Safety under the expanded definition that I just mentioned in Section 1 of the bill. So the considerations that I perceived, I guess, here with regard to the bill include the fact that the Commissioner of Public Safety is not a para fiduciary, so may not have some of the usual para fiduciary concerns in mind as he makes this call. Also, that there is a fund separate for the public, for the killed in the line of duty benefits under Section 2 for this additional benefit. And then finally, that there seems to be some impression, I believe, in this bill that it brings the pension plan into conformity with federal law in addition to the Hometown Heroes Act. And I just wanted to note that there is, in fact, no federal law that would require a pension plan to pay benefits in new circumstances.
Ms. Lucheski, thank you for that setup. Representative Hall, welcome to the Legislative Commission on Pensions and Retirement. If you would state your name for the record and proceed with your bill presentation, and then we'll hear from your testifiers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jeff Howell, representing District 13A. And members, Ms. Lucheski basically says that there's not a requirement to conform to the federal law as far as PRA is concerned, I would like to say that there is a killed in line of duty federal law, and it has been amended numerous times, but the state has failed to keep up with that amendment. If the state would have continued to amend their line of duty as often as the federal government has done, we wouldn't be sitting here having this discussion to conference all of this. And we're not looking to change anything in really PRA, except for the fact that we would like to have a one-stop shop for these grieving families to go to have a determination of what is line of duty. And PRA then would just have to pay out the benefits once the commissioner determines it's a line of duty. What we do want to try and prevent is the situation in the case of Shane Clifton, who was died from a heart attack while he was working, And I'll just read from the letter that was received from PRA. We are sorry to learn of the death of Shane M. Clifton and extend our sympathy to the family. The letter is to provide information about the options available to the Finley Strauss as a survivor of the PRA police and fire plan member. The following information assumes the member's service and salary continued without interruption up to the member's death. Shane's death has been determined to be a regular, not duty-related death because his death was not caused by the performance of an inherently dangerous duty specific to his position. Now, this was overturned in appeal, but I would say that I don't think PRA is in the best position to make the determination of whether it's line of duty or not. I believe that the Commissioner of Public Safety, who has much more in line with what the duties and responsibilities of firefighters and police officers and state troopers are, to make the determination of whether that death was line of duty or not. And we can prevent these types of letters and these types of appeals to get those types of things covered and save the family a much unintended grief of having to go through all of this process. And I'll have you note that his death was in August, and this letter came out in October. So almost a six-week delay, or it could have been an eight-week delay, because I don't really know exactly what date it was, but a delay in notification of what the determination was, and then an appeal process to make it happen. So really what we're trying to do is bring the Hometown Hero Act that is on a federal level and conform that to the state, and so the state would conform with a federal law that basically says a 24-hour, if it happens within a 24-hour period, it is concerned with a line of duty, and let the commissioner make that determination. And with that, I'll go to my testifiers.
Sergeant Powell, thank you. As I sometimes have fond of saying, there are two of you who won or lost the coin toss. And just to go first, what are you?
Mr. Chairman, members, for the record, Dennis Flynn, Executive Director of the Minnesota Police and Peace Officers Association. I'm here tonight to speak in favor of this legislation. And I must say this much needed legislation to bring Minnesota's law equivalent to the same public safety officer benefits provided by the federal government, who back in 2006 passed a bipartisan measure that was called the Federal Hometown Heroes Act, which said basically that public safety officers, police, fire, other public safety officials that suffer a heart attack or a stroke on duty or within 24 hours following their tour of duty, that they in fact would be eligible for killed in the line of duty benefits. And that also included strenuous training that police and firefighters are often subject to in order to remain efficient for their particular jobs. And so, first and foremost, this would put us in conformity, and I think would make it much easier for the survivors of these individuals. The fellow that represented the power, and Chris will talk about that in more detail, but as I understand it, he was working and had gone on four or five emergency runs that day and was actually working out in an effort to stay fit and keeled over dead with a heart attack. So there would be no question in the federal law that he would be entitled under that 2006 law. What we're doing here this session is just to put Minnesota's law in sync with federal law, and so that it would line up for people that have heart attacks or stroke, have a heart episode or a stroke on duty or within 24 hours following their tour of duty. And so I would hope that you would be able to support this. Fortunately, and I'll speak specifically for police, it doesn't happen that often in Minnesota. We average about one benefit claim a year. But we have had situations where Minnesota public public safety officers have received one benefit and not the other benefit. So I think it's time that we sync up with the federal and put some conformity. And with that, I turn it over to my associate here.
Greetings, welcome, and go ahead and state your name to the record and provide us with your testimony.
Good evening, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Chris Parsons. I'm president of the Minnesota Professional Firefighters. And I'm here today to speak in favor of this legislation, and I can say I'm also joined in the audience by members of the Minnesota Fire Chiefs Association and the Minnesota Fire Departments Association, which represent roughly 20,000 of the state's fire service personnel. And we wholeheartedly endorse this bill. Occupational cancer notwithstanding, nothing kills more firefighters in the line of duty than fatal heart attacks. This phenomenon has been studied over the years and published in journals, respected journals, such as the Journal of the American Medical Association and the New England Journal of Medicine. This issue has even spawned rare bipartisan legislation in Washington. And in 2003, if I correct my associate, Mr. Flaherty, it was in 2003 that...
He appreciated that.
Sure.
For the record, Mr. Chair, it passed in 2003, but they didn't adopt the rules, and it didn't become effective until 2006.
There is the flag.
Carry on.
He reviewed upstairs. He threw the flag. He wants to review it upstairs.
Mr. Chair, I stand your record. Needless to say, in 2003, Congress did pass, with unanimous consent in both houses, the Hometown Heroes Survivor Benefits Act, also known as the Hometown Heroes Act. And as Mr. Flaherty stated correctly, it does provide benefits, federal kill-the-line-of-duty benefits to survivors of public safety officers that die in the line of duty within 24 hours of a of responding to a call of a heart attack or stroke. So this bill, much to the state of the of Minnesota's credit, since 2003, they have adhered to the spirit of that legislation and have honored benefits for the most part for first responders that have died within 24 hours of a heart attack or stroke. So what we're looking to do here is to simply, in that piece, codify what's already been by now a long-standing practice in the state. The other issue that we're looking to correct is the undue hardship that we're placing on survivor families. And this issue really hit home in St. Paul when we had one of our own pass away at the station due to a heart attack. He had a 100% blockage of his of one of his arteries that's known as the widowmaker. He was worked on by his colleagues to no avail. They weren't able to revive him, and he subsequently passed away at the hospital. Now, as leaders in our department, we work with the families to secure benefits, and our local president, Mike Smith, worked with the family to secure benefits through CARA, and unfortunately, the family was initially told that they would only qualify for the lesser survivor benefits because Shane was not killed while performing inherently dangerous activities. Now, in the fire service, we don't make a distinction between a firefighter killed at the station of a heart attack and a firefighter that dies in a building, in a burning building collapse. Those are all line of duty deaths. And the state of Minnesota has treated those as such, and PARA, we feel that PARA needs to treat those as such. So I ask that the committee passes this bill on and supports this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Howard, do you have another comment? And bring Ms. Jones from PRA to have her weigh in on this as well, since PRA is a player on this.
I appreciate that, Mr. Chair. And I guess what I'd like to do is just make one little comment that says, you know, we're kind of putting these families in a catch-22 situation because they may qualify for the federal line of duty death benefit, but in order for them to get that, they need to have a certification from a local from the local or the state that tells and says that it was a line of duty. Now, they can appeal that and get it done, but we put them in a precarious position where it, just because we haven't aligned our law with the federal government, they may not get either one of the benefits, either state or federal. So that's why it's very important to bring this into conformity so we don't end up with these families in a catch-22 where they definitely comply and would qualify for the federal payout, but because we haven't done what we need to do on this end, they can't get that certification here in the state. So with that, I'll close.
Thank you, gentlemen. Have you stick by because I'm sure there's a number of questions, but as I said at this time, I'm going to ask Ms. Jones to come up from DERA and share her thoughts from the plan on the proposal in front of the commission. Ms. Jones, welcome. I'm going to ask you to state your name and then provide us with PERA's feedback. Good evening.
Good evening, Mr. Chair, members of the commission. Shana Jones, PERA. PERA's scope on this bill is twofold. Number one, how significantly, if at all, does it change the terms and provisions in our plan? And then number two, as always, is there a cost to the proposal? And so to the first point, it doesn't seem to be a significant shift in how a line of duty death is defined, and it doesn't seem to be unreasonable either. So that doesn't create any opposition for us. Along with that, it seems like the Department of Public Safety is well situated to make the determination about what qualifies as in the line of duty death, so if that makes sense to us as well. As far as the cost, as Mr. Flaherty said, these are so infrequent, thankfully, that this would not change our assumptions going forward. So there's not really a quantifiable cost. Of course, any time you change the terms of a plan, there could be a savings, there could be a cost, but in this case, it's so limited that we don't have a real ability to quantify what it would be.
So, Ms. Jones, it sounds like PERA would be supportive or is not opposed to.
Mr. Chair, correct. We are not opposed to the bill.
Thank you. And I was going to go to Senator Pabst. I see she has her hand up because she is a Senate author on this, to weigh in on this as well. And then Representative Murphy. Senator Pabst.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just had a suggestion and request with this bill because it was heard in the Senate in state and local government. And normally pension bills are just referred directly here because I think there was confusion for section two, there wasn't a realization that was related to a pension plan. So I asked that the commission hear this bill. I would suggest that we keep section two in the omnibus pension bill. But I don't think the rest of it needs to go to finance because I think there's a financial appropriation that's necessary for section one of the bill, which we would not be paying for in the pension commission.
Senator Pappas, one of the things that we are doing is laying everything over so that we get a chance to go and kind of dissect some of these. And I saw Ms. Lincheski jotting some notes to that end to see what we get the eyes out of and teach cross on this.
That's the idea. And then section one would then, you know, my plan would be to strip section two out of the bill and have section one then proceed on its own through the normal process.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Howe, is this only for the professional firefighter and the professional police officer? Or is it for the volunteer fire departments also?
Representative Powell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Murphy. It would apply for all of them, whether they be career or paid on call or volunteer. It would cover all those folks. It is not only a PRA issue, but when you talk about what you're doing that.
Thank you very much.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Howell, then Chesty, perhaps. I see sections 1 and 2 are effective the day following final enactment. And what about then we're just going forward? So does the case that Shane Clifton not benefit, the family not benefit from this bill then?
Ms. Ms. Lincheski, I think you might be the appropriate one to at least get us started on the conversation. And she's passing over the phone from Representative Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that has been reversed, and that has been paid and covered. So they were taken care of.
Okay, under the Fed.
Under both.
Oh, under both. Okay.
Representative
Mr. Chair, maybe Mr. Flaherty or Mr. Parsons, then there are situations between that have happened in Minnesota up to this time, from the time that we started the Hometown Heroes, and 2000 was it 2006? You said the last time we addressed this issue. And so what happens to those people that were denied? And
right.
Then they find out about this new bill.
Mr. Chairman, Brian Rice, representing the Minnesota Professional Firefighters. Representative Murphy, the reason the bill is coming in part is because there has been at least three cases that I'm aware where there was the state interpretation of Section 1 on the killing line of duty death benefit the state pays out. The state had refused or did not award the benefit. Families had to litigate the issue and get the state benefit. As Representative Howe said, it's a catch-22. There's a regulation to the federal law that says it's called prerequisite certification. You can't get your federal benefit until the state agency has approved the benefit. And this, because the state's law did not line up with the federal law, it made it very difficult for the families to get the benefit. So the circumstance was the spouse was told your husband or your wife was a hero, the kids said your dad was a hero, but they have a big funeral, the governor shows up, and guess what? You don't get your benefit until in this case, 5 years later. Likewise, in the PRA case with Shane, he's a hero, he's dead, the daughter says his dad's a hero, but PRA says, no, he didn't die in line of duty. It was just a regular duty death. And so when we met with Representative Powell last fall, two cases were pending, one for a volunteer chief at Rice Lake who died in December of 13 and just a week ago got the benefit after almost 2.5 years on the state level. So now we can go ahead and get the federal benefit. And quite frankly, the police and fire community, they were followed up and said, there's got to be a better way to solve this. And Representative Powell, let's get one stop shop, make one determination. Paris law used to be, if you were killed in the scope and course of employment, you got a death benefit. But in 2007, there was a very dramatic redoing of Paris disability and pension law. They adopted this inherent dangers of the job. You had to die because of an inherently dangerous duty, and that's led to some rather strange interpretations of their statute, and that's why this bill is before this body to just say, look, if you're a hometown hero and die of a heart attack as a police officer, a firefighter, a stroke while you're working or within 24 hours of the shift, you actually died because of the work you did.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Rice, then, so the situations for the people that were hanging have been taken care of, and there won't be people coming then retroactively, and so it's okay to have this effective date following enactment.
Mr. Rice. Mr. Chairman, Representative Murphy, yes. I believe this creates a very bright line. Everyone that we know of in the past has been dealt with, and this would create a bright line going forward in the future, so hopefully we wouldn't have to come, and we wouldn't have to keep asking the commission to make a determination or the legislature to change the law.
Thank you. Members, we do have a majority of our members here, so I'm going to officially convene the meeting, and I'd like to ask Representative Albright if you have had a chance to review the minutes and would move the minutes from our last meeting of March 22nd.
Mr. Chair, when I find those recess, so I move the minutes.
Representative Albright, moving the minutes from our 22nd of March meeting. Any corrections, additions, hearing none, and seeing none? All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Those opposed? Is there anyone else who would like to testify? Oh, excuse me, before I ask, is there anyone from the public who would like to testify or provide feedback to the commission? Senator Rosen, you are next.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Powell, perhaps I missed something. Who in the past has determined whether it was in the line of duty, and has anybody heard of the Commissioner of Public Safety to see if that is appropriate for him to determine ongoing that it is in the line of duty?
Representative Powell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually, it's been in two different places. We've had PR making a determination, where we've had the Department of Public Safety making a determination, and that's led to some of these confusing problems. So I have spoken to the Commissioner of Public Safety, and she is willing and would be acceptable and amenable to taking on this duty. So she already makes a determination, so this would just make a determination all in one place, and it wouldn't be split in our state.
Other member questions at this time? Hearing none and seeing none, and having seen no one rush down from the audience tonight to testify on the bill, Representative Holliday said bills are being laid over tonight for possible inclusion. So I thank you for your time and thank you for your testifiers. The next bill that we have will be Representative Mensa, and he has some constituents who come from the distance. And then the next bill on the desk will be the Chief and Tapas Bill, House File 3136, Senate File 2853 on deck. Representative Mensa, bringing down to
While he's here, we have some conflicting meetings over in the Senate, and I'm trying to get some more of my senators over here. But if we have an official quorum, do we have an official quorum, and will we be taking action on any of these bills?
We will not be taking action on any of the bills this evening, because as soon as we probably start getting a quorum on this side, we're going to lose the quorum.
Well, once we have a quorum, we have a quorum.
Senator Pappas, in the past, we tried to move some things. We did have members challenging that we would have a physical forum, so I am going to not go down that road and worry about that as an issue.
I won't let harass them come over if that's
okay. Yep. Representative Mensa, welcome this evening, sir. And before we get started, I'm going to ask Ms. Lanchesky, Ms. Barth, to go ahead and give us a little background on what the commission is looking at, then we'll go to you and your testifiers. Ms. Barth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this bill will provide two current DSABI range employees a second chance to elect retroactive and prospective TRA retirement coverage instead of their current retirement coverage under the MNSCU individual retirement account plan. This is due to MNSCU's failure to provide both individuals the retirement option election when they reach tenure in 2012.
Thank you, Ms. Barth. Representative Mensa, just a couple of procedural questions for you. We do not have official introductions that I'm aware of tonight on how to find the Senate. By are those in process? Because we're going to need those in order to be able to ultimately include these if that is the wishes of the Commission and the Pensions Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. They are in process. The bills have been dropped. I actually should be able to get you those, I think, tonight.
Excellent. Representative Mensa, welcome to the Commission. Go ahead and introduce yourself, and then we'll get your testifiers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jason Metlin, District 6B, and I've got my two constituents here, and would like to thank Mrs. Barth for getting the work done with them over the last few months. Or is it Miss? Okay. Miss. I do have nine aunties on one side of the family, so it is always good to ask and not presume.
That's it to the bill, please.
To the bill, Mr. Chair. Essentially, we ran into this issue, and I testified before the committee in my first term, and MNSCU had failed to send some documents, which I understand that this committee will be taking up hopefully sometime over the summer, and tightening up the paperwork keeping ship there. This is three from one institution in my district, and I don't think it's fair to the committee or the state have to keep going back to the trough, so to speak. So I appreciate, again, Mrs. Barth's work on this. We did have a good template, though, from Mr. Del Carlo's case, which the committee passed a few years ago, which gave us a good template to work from here. And essentially, this does exactly what Mrs. Barth said, for the point of brevity. And if you'd like testimony from my constituents, I'd be more than happy to.
Certainly welcome to the Commission, and what the Commission would like to do is just to hear a little bit from you. We've heard some things. If there's some other things that you can share with us, and then what we'll do is we'll bring down the representatives from MNSCU, and then there will be some questions as to what you're going to ask me, but stay tuned as well, just like we did with the last one. Again, welcome, and who will be going first?
I'll go first.
Welcome, and if you'll go ahead and identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Don Olson. I teach early childhood special ed at Wasabi Range College, and I was overlooked as far as being offered the TRA second chance option when I gained my tenure on August 21st, 2005. Thank you.
Good evening. Go ahead and identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, my name is Mary Kay Randall, and I teach human services and chemical dependency at Wasabi Range College. I was also the same scenario. I actually got the tenure the same year, and on August 21st, 2012, when I received tenure, I was not given any second chance carry option. And I really appreciate you listening to our bill. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you, ladies, and we'll just have you stand by. And I'm going to ask, I see we've got a couple of Minsky representatives here tonight, Mr. Dale and Mr. Hughes, to come down and share your perspective on this from his view. And I'll just ask you to just kind of switch up and maybe sit in the first row there in case there are some questions for members. And that is what we will do, is go to member questions after we hear from the two gentlemen from Minsky, Mr. Dale and Mr. Hughes. Who will be going first this evening, Mr. Dale or Mr. Hughes? Good evening. Go ahead and introduce yourself and provide some testimony, please.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Derek Hughes, and I represent MeansQ as the system-wide director for compensation and retirement. With MeansQ, collectively, we acknowledge we do not have the election forms. We're not able to provide election forms, including that the employees were offered the elections that they were entitled to at the time of 2012. And we find the language in the bill fairly addressed the situation and sufficiently resolved.
Thank you, Mr. Hughes. Mr. Dale, anything that you'd like to add before the commission's consideration this evening?
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Chris Dale. I'm Assistant Director for Labor Management at State College of the University. I have nothing further to add.
Members, questions for the testifiers or the author of the bill? Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just looking at the Ms. Barth's notes, and I'm wondering, since both Ms. Rendo and Ms. Olson received tenure at the same time, why is one required to pay so much more than the other? And actually, that's not what they're required. That's the actuarial account. Do we know how much they will be required to pay?
Ms. Barth, do you happen to know that? I see pulling your mic toward you, there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the reason for the kind of big disparity, it looks like, in the amounts is that Ms. Olson is eligible for the role of Mandy. She apparently has previous TRA coverage. And I don't have the estimates right now for how much would owe presently, but that's just the whole amount that TRA has to receive or be a whole.
Member Pappas.
And what the bill says, then, Mr. Chairman, is they have to pay what has been what TRA calculates to be what they would have paid with interest, and then MeansQ will make the difference. Is that correct? But I still would like to, I think they need to know what their liability might be, because sometimes that scares people away.
Ms. Barth.
Senator Pettit, maybe, I don't know if Mr. Meeks had an answer for that in particular.
Members, my recollection on some of these is this is permissive language to allow them to do that, and if you will, the sticker price might not be available. Even though we would agree to do it, the individual may decline because of the cost or what have you moving forward, which I suspect is what we're looking at in this particular situation. It is nice for them to know what that number is, but I think that they also want to know that they have the option once they get the number, and they may not be happening simultaneously here. Is that what you were going to say, Mr. Hughes?
Mr. Chair,
yes, sir. Members, other questions for the author of the bill or the testifiers or the members from the MeansQ? Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, I didn't represent Mesa. I didn't get the clarification of the testimony. You said you didn't have receipts or you didn't have evidence. Is that correct? And so you're saying that they are right.
That's correct.
Okay. And so as we go along, as we proceed, if they find that the amounts that they have to pay back is acceptable, there will be no objection from NSCU, and NSCU will pay their part.
Mr. Hughes, Mr. Dale.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, that's correct.
Good.
Further questions? Other member questions? Anyone else need to testify on the matter before the commission tonight from the public? Thank you. We'll lay over for possible inclusion in the 2016 omnibus bill. Our next item, and I know that we're going to have some members on the hall that are going to need to leave here shortly. Representative Thiessen and Senator Pappas, your bill is next, which is House File 3136 and Senate File 2864. I'm not sure who's going to, or both of you are going to be on this. We'll have Ms. Lincheski go ahead and set up this for us. Ms. Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The bill is a very simple change. It's just revising the dollar amount, the employer contribution amount, from $5,000 to $7,000 per year per employee for a supplemental pension plan. There's a general prohibition on employers entering into or sponsoring supplemental plans, pension plans for their employees, where they're covered by an existing public pension plan. And in this case, their employees are all being covered by PARA. This is a supplemental plan that's offered by the Laborers International Union of North America, National Industrial Pension Fund. The employers at issue are the City of Minneapolis, City of St. Paul, Minneapolis Park and Rec Board, and the St. Paul Public Schools. Years ago, apparently, these employers bargained to become participating employers in this multi-employer pension fund. This particular fund is in critical status or red zone status and is had to adopt a rehabilitation plan, which requires employer contributions to be increased by 10% each year. To do that, the employers then have to make these increasing contributions to the plan or suffer all sorts of negative consequences. Therefore, they need to increase the employee contribution or the employee deduction out of employee paychecks in order to make these contributions. Sometime in 2016, I understand some of the employees affected by this will have employer contributions on their behalf made that will hit this limit, this $5,000 limit. So the union, I believe, is coming forward and requesting that the annual amount be increased to $7,000.
Senator Pappas, Representative Thiessen, since you are the authors of this bill, anything that you'd like to add at this point? Representative Thiessen, that's a really good bill. And it's needed to get done so that they can work on getting them. So, I mean, how it works after we pass this bill is, you know, I think there might be, you know, how they figure that out is up to the pension plans and the employers, but to allow them to actually make progress to get this pension plan back into shape. We need to pass this legislation. This is limiting their ability to actually comply with the federal law. So I think it makes sense. Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, ditto.
Well, Mr. Hess, we're going to give you a chance to speak as well. Good evening. Welcome to the commission. If you would state your name and receive your testimony.
Mr. Chair, Russell Hess, political coordinator for the Minnesota Laborers District Council. I also think it's a good bill. To put a little more detail into what Ms. Lincheski said, it's a pretty simple bill. Like, to teach my children that I just want to change one digit in the law. They think that's pretty awesome. But
I've tried that.
So here's, we think this, you know, our members are doing the responsible thing here. Due to, you know, downturns in their investments of this particular pension fund around 2008, they got into the red zone. The workout plan is an increase 10% each year. Since doing that, the funded status is, you know, is on a glide path back to being well funded. It's at 75% this year. We do butt up against at least one of the bargaining units. St. Paul Housing will start hitting that cap depending on how many hours people work in 2017. currently negotiating contracts that include those years. So we want to make sure that as we negotiate those contracts, that the employers can be in compliance with the statute.
Thank you, Mr. Hess. Member questions? Member Anderson.
So, Mr. Chair, do we have anybody from the schools and communities impacted by this that are going to testify about this bill, or have they provided any feedback?
Mr. Hess.
I have contacted the employers, and they've told me that they're okay with it. The unique thing about this is while it says it's an employer contribution, in the case of this plan, the employer deducts the contribution from the wages of the workers. So in the case of, let's say, the city of St. Paul, the cost the employer is making the contribution, but it's coming out of the wages of the workers. So essentially, the workers are paying the pension contribution, not the city of St. Paul. So there's essentially no impact to the public entities.
Representative Anderson. Other member questions at this time? Hearing none, seeing none, our mission this evening is to lay out the bills for possible inclusion. That's what we're going to do with this, Mr. Hess. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
And we have two other items left on the agenda this evening. And the House is going to be going back into session shortly. And I want to just make sure that we are mindful of that. I know that the DFL also is practicing, if I'm not mistaken, Representative Keeson. So wanting to make sure that we're covered on that as well.
Let's keep going.
Okay. Members, I apologize. Something has come up, and I'm going to need to adjourn the meeting for this evening, and we will pick up the other two items at our next meeting. We are adjourned. Thank you.